The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program, the last one of the week. Probably have enough material here for a two-hour program, but we'll squeeze in as much as we can. President Trump spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast yesterday morning, so we've got a few highlights from that presentation. And also, we'll comment later on this GOP budget monstrosity that's working its way through Congress. We had a program earlier this week about just the $1 trillion deficit that the United States is running. It's just crazy the amount of money that both sides of the aisle are spending. And of course, in this case, I mean, all of it's controlled by the GOP, the White House, the House of Representatives, the Senate, controlled by Republicans, and more reckless spending like never before. I mean, outspending the Obama administration, if you can imagine that. Well, it's Friday as well, and on Fridays we typically try to get through some emails. We've got a few of those lined up for the end of the program. And, well, I won't even mention what I had planned for a study at the end, because we'll see if we have time to squeeze it in later. I want to start by talking about some anniversaries. 21 years ago today, I married my wonderful wife at the Civic Center in downtown Oklahoma City. A wonderful occasion, a beautiful day. And, of course, 21 incredible years along with her and, of course, my two children as well that are growing up right before our eyes, 17 and 16. Both of them now moving through to the last couple years of their teenaged life. That was 1997, February the 9th. And then the day after our wedding, February the 10th, 1997, the Worldwide Church of God filed a copyright lawsuit against the PCG in a California federal court, aiming to stop us from printing and distributing Mystery of the Ages. Now, 3 weeks before that lawsuit was filed, going back to January 21st, 1997, the Worldwide Church of God attorney, Ralph Helge, he wrote to the PCG, the Philadelphia Church of God, he wrote to my father demanding that the PCG stop distributing Mystery of the Ages. He said, "We would appreciate your advising us by what authority you are, without the permission of the church, copying and publishing said book." That was Ralph Helge in January of 1997. He continued and said, "Please advise us promptly as to your intentions in this matter. If we do not hear from you promptly, we shall assume that you are violating the church's copyright in said regard, and that it is your intention to continue to do so. In such case, we will take appropriate action without further notice." Well, my father chose not to respond to that letter. And then 3 weeks later, the lawsuit came. In that complaint, the Worldwide Church of God, they filed it on February the 10th, as I said. But in their complaint to the court, they suggested that since the PCG might receive public donations from its free distribution of the book, that these donations would deprive the Worldwide Church of God of the benefits, quote-unquote, the benefits of Mystery of the Ages. So they were saying that we were somehow robbing them of income by printing a book that they hated and wanted to bury. We were stealing income from them. That's the way they presented it to the court. Now, they also claim that because of our action, the relationship between them and their members had been injured. According to the brief they filed, the WCG had already suffered irreparable damage. They had been damaged by this action. Irreparably so. Well, we found out about the court filing the following day, February the 11th, 1997, when we received a letter from another WCG attorney, Benjamin Scheibe. He was representing the law offices of Brown and Woods, and that was their law firm during that 6 years of litigation, located in Beverly Hills. And Scheibe informed us that on February 12th, the Worldwide Church would file an ex parte application asking the judge for a temporary restraining order that would immediately stop us from distributing Mystery of the Ages. So we were scrambling. I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of experience with attorneys and lawsuits. Most of what we dealt with back in the 1990s was just some legal counsel on occasion for wills and estates, things like that, but certainly nothing like this. So we contacted a friend who was an attorney who then suggested that we hire a law firm in Southern California where the action was filed. And so on Monday, the following Monday, February the 17th, we hired the services of the Los Angeles law firm Munger, Tolles, and Olson. And Mark Helm, he was our lead attorney. He was the one they appointed to head up the case. And the hearing in front of the district court was scheduled for the next day, February the 18th. So he was hired on February 17th and then spent a fair bit of time that night on the phone with representatives from our church, Dennis Leap and some others, being brought up to speed on what this lawsuit was about. And then the very next day, Mark Helm stood before Judge Spencer Letts in the Los Angeles courtroom. He didn't have anyone from the PCG at his side. And so all that we knew was what we heard from him after the fact. He goes into this courtroom with the Worldwide Church of God and all their representatives, and there's Mark Helm just standing alone after having had just one day to prepare for the case. So Judge Letts spoke up and said that he had read the WCG's brief, and he wondered why there was nothing filed by the PCG. We didn't have a brief. We didn't even have time to file a brief. So all that the judge had to go on was what the Worldwide Church of God had filed. And Mr. Helm explained to the court that he had only been on board with the PCG for a few hours, basically, and he didn't yet know all the facts, and that we simply didn't have enough time to file a response. But he at least offered our defense verbally, based on the phone conversations he had the previous night. He said to Judge Letts, "This is not a case where the Worldwide Church of God is exploiting the copyright in order to disseminate and earn profits from Mystery of the Ages. This is a case where they are trying to suppress and not disseminate Mr. Armstrong's books. That's our understanding." And Judge Letts responded by saying, "Well, that's my understanding as well. That's the way I understand this." And that just left our attorney stunned. He agreed with us. And he only had the Worldwide Church of God brief to go on. He just read through that brief and he quickly established that in his view, the Worldwide Church of God had no right to suppress Mr. Armstrong's works. Later on in the hearing, the judge turned to the Worldwide Church of God attorney and he said, "You're not going to be dealing with a closed mind, but what I know about this case, but for what Mr. Helm just said, is what you've told me." He said this to the WCG lawyer. "What I know about the case is what you've told me, and it raises, in my judgment, very serious questions and very serious irreparable harm on the other side as well." You think you've been irreparably harmed. Well, in my judgment, it raises irreparable harm on their side. That's the way he saw it, Judge Letts. He basically told them that they were guilty of what they were accusing us of. Here's how Judge Letts assessed the dispute in that first hearing, February the 18th, 1997. Passing through all of these anniversaries, 21 years ago, tomorrow, the lawsuit was filed. And here's what Judge Letts said on that February 18th hearing, 1997. He said, "The copyright seems to me to have two primary purposes, neither of which is at issue here. One is to keep there from being confusion about who is the person publishing the work. The second is to keep strangers from profiting from the work. Neither of those is at issue when somebody who wants to suppress the work entirely. Neither of those is at issue with somebody who just wants to suppress the book." He said it wasn't a question of whether there would be two publishers or three, but rather whether there will be one or none. That's Judge Letts. Basing his judgment on the brief, one brief, filed by the Worldwide Church of God, February 10th, 1997. Well, there's a lot more to the story, as I know many of you know, but suffice it to say, Judge Letts' judgment there early on provided us with such a huge boost of encouragement and confidence. God was backing this little church. God was defending the Philadelphia Church of God. Well, if you want to dig into more of the story, be sure to go to thetrumpet.com and request Raising the Ruins. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century, watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Now he said, "This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed or preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come."
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Each year, this event reminds us that faith is central to American life and to liberty. Our founders invoked our Creator four times in the Declaration of Independence. Our currency declares, "In God we trust." And we place our hands on our hearts as we recite the Pledge of Allegiance and proclaim we are one nation under God. Our rights are not given to us by man. Our rights come from our Creator. no matter what, no earthly force can take those rights away. That is why the words, "Praise be to God," are etched atop the Washington Monument, and those same words are etched into the hearts of our people. So today we praise God for how truly blessed we are to be American. Across our land, we see the splendor of God's creation. Throughout our history, we see the story of God's providence. And in every city and town, we see the Lord's grace all around us through a million acts of kindness, courage, and generosity. We love God.
That was President Trump yesterday morning delivering his speech at the 66th Annual National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C., speaking before all of these religious leaders and members of Congress, dignitaries coming from around the world, some uplifting words pointing out that our founders invoked the Creator God four times in the Declaration of Independence. And in all these traditions that we have, in God we trust, one nation under God. Some uplifting words for sure. And in looking at America's history, we've certainly seen God's providence, as he said there at the end of that clip. God has blessed the United States like no other nation. And then the mercy and the grace that he's extended, all of these blessings. And then at the end he says, "We love God." Well, how much, though, when you look at the nation as a whole, how much love is there for God? It's hard to find fault with those words that you just heard. But then you look at all the other stories that we gather, day in and day out. Human trafficking. Richard sent me one this morning. Sam gave me one yesterday on schools in New York using pornography to educate, quote unquote, to provide sex education for your children. There's all these crises, sicknesses internally, the opioid overdoses, tens of thousands of people, the crime. We love God. And that makes me think of Ezekiel 33, where it talks about people. Of course, this is aimed at people of God who actually knew God. And they sit before you as my people, the prophet said. They hear the words, but they don't do them. For with their mouth they show much love, but their heart goes after their covetousness. See, going back to even what I said in the first segment, when we were fighting for Mystery of the Ages, there were quite a few people in the Laodicean churches, people of God that knew the truth and that agreed with so much of what was in Mystery of the Ages and that were cheering us on as we fought against Goliath. But they didn't have the courage to join in on the fight. Doesn't God expect more than just words of support or words that show love? James 1 and verse 22 says, "But be you doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves." When we hear, but we don't do, God says we're deceiving ourselves. How easy is it for us to hear instruction or to hear a good speech or to hear about the founders and all the references to the Creator God and to not really change or to repent or to overcome or to get rid of the sin in our midst? In my father's booklet, The Epistles of James, he says, if we just hear and don't do, we're deceiving ourselves. Once you do that, you begin to let lies and deceit cause serious problems in your family, your marriage, and your child rearing. And we could add to that in the nation. Look at how many lies and deceits there are in the land today, hear but don't do, deception, deceiving our own selves. Are we deceiving ourselves? We do when we don't act on God's truth, on God's precious instructions. Notice one more statement from that prayer breakfast. This is yesterday, clip 7.
As long as we are true to America's founding and the example that all of these great founders have set, we can all be heroes to everybody, and they can be heroes to us. As long as we open our eyes to God's grace and open our hearts to God's love, then America will forever be the land of the free, the home of the brave, and the light unto all nations.
That's President Trump yesterday at the National Prayer Breakfast, talking about America being a light to all nations. And of course, this was something that the founding fathers talked about as well. Well, even before they came along, it was back in the 1600s, I think, when that was talked about in those colonies that would become states in the United States. That shining city on a hill, based on Matthew 5, Jesus said, "Let your light shine. Let your light so shine to this world before men," it says, "that they may see your good works." They need to see good works. And then they'll glorify God in heaven. They'll glorify their Father in heaven. I mean, yes, God does want us to set an example. But are we setting an example? Do we love God? Are we putting that on display? Do other nations look at America and say, "Wow, look at how much they really love and obey their great creator God. Look at how much God is in the center of their existence, of all of their national activities." God does want this world to see good works, but where do you see them? It's a sin-sick world. It's just drenched in sin. Sickness from head to toe, like Isaiah 1 says. It's because we've failed to follow up and to do what it is that we hear. You look at ancient Israel, just some history from the Old Testament. God chose them and told them, "Look, you go and set an example for me. Be an example to those nations around you." In Jeremiah 13 and verse 11, it says that that God raised up the houses of Israel and Judah that they might be unto me for a people and for a name and for a praise and for a glory. But they would not hear. God wanted them to bring forth the praises and the glory of God, but they weren't doers. My father wrote in the Jeremiah booklet, he said, "Here's the big overview. God created the tribes, later the nations of Israel, for an incredible purpose. They were created to be a praise and a glory to God. The nations of Israel were to cause the whole world to praise and glorify God." Now that's coming in the wonderful world of tomorrow, but you look at the United States and Britain today, the light is not shining. We're not bringing glory to God. Verse 9, it continues. Well, this is preceding the one I just read. It says, "Thus says the Eternal, after this manner will I mar the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem," or the nations of Israel, "this evil people which refuse to hear my words, which walk in the imagination of their heart and walk after other gods to serve them and to worship them, shall even be as this girdle," it says, "which is good for nothing." See, God looks at all of the evil and the disobedience and the stubbornness and the idolatry and the many sex sins and the family division and what we're doing to our children, the crime and the violence, the bloody chain of violence. All of this corruption, I've quoted from George Washington a time or two this week. He said, "If in the revolution of ages, virtue should give way to the corruption of morals, profligacy of manners, and listlessness for the preservations of the natural and unalienable rights of mankind, then usurpation may arise upon the ruins of liberty. I mean, you're going to kill yourselves. We're going to end up killing ourselves if we're corrupted by this profligacy of manners and listlessness. I mentioned this on Monday, what he said in his farewell address, 1796, about just how important it is to avoid going into debt as a nation. And look at what we're doing today. He said, you know, by all means, avoid the accumulation of debt. Not only by shunning occasions of expense, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidable wars may have occasioned, not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. Don't just throw it upon our children and make them worry about it. And yeah, that's what we see. That's what we see them doing in Washington. This new GOP budget is going to add something like $500 billion in spending over the next 2 years. This is additional spending. We're not just carrying on with the status quo, which in itself goes up, 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 up. This is adding $500 billion to what the U.S. spends in the next 2 years. I mean, the deficit for just this year is running at something like, as I said the other day, $1 trillion. Some say $1.1 trillion. I mean, just 2 years ago, the deficit was $439 billion. It wasn't that long before that when it was like, wow, $200 billion deficit. Then $400, now $1 trillion. I mean, we are going into debt at a faster pace than ever before. Profligate spending, raiding the treasury before Rome burns. That's what we're seeing. It gets ramrodded through the Senate in a 24-hour period, and then now we'll see what the House Republicans do. But the White House is on board with it. The Trump administration, the GOP, all of them. Well, just a few maybe that are voicing some disapproval. Rand Paul, he tried to delay it last night just to get people to maybe vote on trying to keep the caps that are there so that we don't spend more. How about that? How about if we just do that? How about if we just follow through on the promises we've made to our constituents and don't increase spending? Here's what he said in his speech. This was on the Senate floor, I believe, last evening, clip one.
One of the things this bill does is it's going to add $500 billion in spending over a two-year period. This bill increases spending 21%. Does that sound like a large amount? Anybody at home getting a bonus or an increase in your paycheck of 21%? And yet your government's going to spend 21% more without really having a full debate, without having amendments. So the reason I'm here tonight is to put people on the spot. I want people to feel uncomfortable. I want them to have to answer people at home who said, how come you were against President Obama's deficits, and then how come you're for Republican deficits? Isn't that the very definition of intellectual dishonesty? If you were against President Obama's deficits and now you're for the Republican deficits, isn't that the very definition of hypocrisy? People need to be made aware. Your senators need to answer people from home, and they need to answer this debate. We should have a full-throated debate. My amendment says this simply. We should obey the budget caps. What are budget caps? These are limits we placed on spending, both military and non-military. We placed them in 2011, and guess what? For a year or two, government actually shrunk. But now government's taking off. And this new stimulus of deficit spending will be as big as President Obama's stimulus.
That was the Obama stimulus coming out of the crash of 2008. Now, I mean, we keep hearing about how great everything is. Jobs, stock market, excepting this past week, I guess, but everything's going great guns. And $1.1 trillion deficit just this year. It's as big as President Obama's stimulus. Rand Paul tries to delay it for a couple of hours, but the Senate gets together in the middle of the night, 1:45 a.m., to pass it on through. 71 to 28. Only 28 voted against it. There was a piece at CNN today about how our debt is a threat to the country. That's what they're quoting from Rand Paul. I think this is from Paul Ryan. I'll come to him in just a second. But he gave this speech in 2013 at CPAC. We've got to tackle this problem before it tackles us. That was 2013, and CNN says he was far from alone. Republicans insisted that any spending legislation, even for disaster relief, be paid for with budget offsets. Every major Republican leader talked about debt and deficit relentlessly. That focus on deficit reduction and spending restraint bled into the 2016 primary as the top-tier candidates, including Rand Paul, championed it. One candidate, however, did not. That candidate was Donald Trump, the self-proclaimed king of debt. Mr. Trump showed little care or concern for the issue that had animated the party he was running to lead. It quotes Mitt Romney and something he said in the lead up to the election in 2016, that if you nominate Donald Trump as the leader of the Republican Party, it's going to result in a massive increase in spending, ballooning the deficit and the national debt. That's what Romney said just a couple years ago, not even that. And well, Trump went on to win. He won the election, CNN says here, and suddenly his priorities, immigration, trade protectionism, and a tax cut, became the party's principles. Curtailing spending and reducing debt went out the window, or at least way down the list of what the GOP cared about. And Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and almost the entire rest of the Republican Party, sans Paul, and a handful of House conservatives, went along for the ride. Everyone's just going along with it. They're there protesting the Republicans. When President Obama and his administration are spending like drunken sailors. And now it's even worse than that. And nary a protest, save Rand Paul and maybe a couple of others in the Freedom Caucus. It says a two-year spending bill that would increase the federal deficit by more than $300 billion was being rammed through at the last minute and without any amendments being offered. It says the natural result of our current style of governing, lurching from crisis to crisis, is this sort of showdown. Paul is right that it is absolutely ridiculous that a near 700-page piece of legislation that senators got their hands on around midnight Wednesday should be passed by midnight Thursday. And yet, when you're faced with the possibility of a second government shutdown, in the space of 17 days, passing this sort of legislation, whether or not it represents a massive U-turn on the very priorities your party touted just a few years ago, becomes your only option. Well, that's the only option we have in front of us. We have to do it. And so everyone suddenly is on board with it. Everyone, I mean, from the GOP. Listen to what Rush Limbaugh had to say yesterday on his program. This is clip two.
I know I'm sounding kind of cynical here, but it's not cynicism. It's a realization that all the arguments, the budget fight every year is the best weapon the Democrats have to portray Republicans as racist, sexist, bigots, homophobes of no compassion who hate and want to starve kids. It never changes. Meanwhile, We're told that the national debt's going to wipe us out, that the deficit's going to wipe us out. The deficit. We've got to get a handle on these deficits. The deficit is it's growing because the national debt is growing. And I know theoretically all this is bad, but in the real world, all of the apocalyptic warnings I grew up hearing have yet to happen. The national debt has not choked us. The national debt has not destroyed us. We may be living in the middle of the destruction and don't see it yet. But for some reason, I didn't get caught up in it. I think one of the reasons why is I'm not personally affected by these never-ending allegations of being responsible for a government shutdown.
That's Rush Limbaugh, who has a lot of pretty sound advice to give and commentary, typically coming more from the conservative wing. And that's him saying that, look, we've been hearing these apocalyptic warnings since I was a youth. I've grown up hearing them. And the national debt hasn't choked us. We haven't yet been destroyed. And so I don't get caught up in it. And evidently, a lot of Republicans think the same way. This piece from the Washington Examiner, I think this was yesterday. No, actually, it was February 2nd, so about a week ago. It says here, in making the pitch, again, just some recent history. I'll play you a comparison here with Paul Ryan in just a second. But this goes back to George W. Bush, 2005. In making the pitch for Social Security personal accounts in his 2005 State of the Union speech, former President George W. Bush declared that absent action, 13 years from now, in 2018, Social Security will be paying out more than it takes in. By the year 2042, he said, the entire system would be exhausted and bankrupt. In response, the Examiner says, Democrats portrayed his warnings as alarmist and successfully deployed the argument that there was no Social Security crisis. What are you talking about? What an alarmist! These are apocalyptic warnings. It's not going to happen. Now we're in 2018, the Examiner says. Now that we're in 2018, we know that the projections cited by Bush were off, but only in the sense that they proved overly optimistic. In reality, the Social Security system has been paying out more than it takes in ever since 2010, and these annual deficits have totaled over $600 billion. This means that benefits are currently being subsidized by taxpayers through the payment of IOUs that the rest of the U.S. government built up by raiding the Social Security Trust Fund to pay for decades of extravagant federal spending. It says, as to the date Bush referred to, way out in the future, when the trust fund becomes completely depleted, leading to automatic benefit cuts, it has since moved up 8 years to 2034. So we're accelerating. We're heading to the edge of a cliff, and it's like we're putting our foot on the accelerator. What President Bush said in 2005, that was overly optimistic. He said, you're going to be sending out more than you're taking in 2018. Well, we reached that point in 2010. He said the whole system's going to collapse in 2042. Now you've got to push that up to 2034. 2034, I mean, I guess you could still say, well, that's so long into the future. I mean, that's a full 16 years. We've been hearing it our whole lives. We've been hearing it. We've been growing up hearing these things. Just to finish this Examiner piece, it says, put another way, in 2018, we're now just 16 years away from the day of reckoning that was going to be 37 years away when Bush warned about it. Yet when it came time for President Trump to deliver the 2018 State of the Union address, he made no mention of Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, three programs that currently cost over $2 trillion, accounting for more than half of the federal budget. Year in and year out, every single year, it didn't even come up at the State of the Union address. Instead, the Examiner says, he touted paid family leave and proposed $1.5 trillion in new infrastructure spending. See, forget about these warnings, these apocalyptic warnings. We've been hearing these our whole lives, and we haven't died yet. The national debt hasn't destroyed us yet. I mean, we're not choking ourselves. The White House is totally on board, as I say, with this most recent monstrosity pushed not by liberal spenders from the Democrat Party, pushed on through by Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and all the rest. Here's how the White House responded yesterday when a reporter asked, well, you know, haven't the Republicans said for years that we need to reduce cost and lower the deficit? Here's how that exchange went down. This is clip three.
Republicans for years have said there needs to be fiscal restraint, years and years and years. Now we know that the deficit for the fiscal year, this fiscal year, is potentially going to reach $1 trillion. You've got the House Freedom Caucus saying about this deal, growing the size of government by 13% adds to the swamp instead of draining it. This is not what the American people sent us to do. Essentially, they're saying some within their party are being hypocritical. Is the president concerned about all of this spending? And what exactly is your plan to pay for it?
He is concerned about spending in Washington. He's expressed that for years. Let me just say off the bat, we do support the two-year spending bill that is being discussed and voted on in the House and Senate. You know, it lifts the caps on defense spending, which is something that the Secretary of Defense, the President's generals have told him that they need to ensure that we rebuild our military and protect our national security. With respect to deficits, you know, we're going to be releasing a budget on Monday. The budget does move us toward a path of restoring fiscal responsibility. It reduces our deficit by trillions of dollars. I'm not going to get more specific. You guys will get more on Monday. But it does incorporate these budget caps, incorporates the tax bill, incorporates our other priorities. So we do think that that budget will outline a path toward fiscal responsibility.
It's the same responses we've heard before. It doesn't matter the administration. Increase spending 21% and then say, hey, what we've got coming out, you'll get to it Monday. Don't worry about it. But what's coming out Monday? It's a lean budget. Yes, lots of cuts. Fiscally responsible. We're right on the path toward restoring fiscal responsibility, even as the window closes. Even as the Social Security Trust Fund, quote unquote, even as it's about to go bankrupt, 16 years away. How many of us have children who are 7, 8, 9 years of age? Add 16 years to it. What happens when they're 22, 23, 24 years of age? What happens in this country, the United States, I mean, when our children are our age? What happens then? Who pays for this? Is the next Rush Limbaugh, is he going to come along 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now and say, look, I've been hearing about this all my life. It never did happen, so, you know, I'm not really worried about it. It's not going to destroy us. We're too big to fail. Here's Paul Ryan yesterday justifying this budget-busting bill, clip number four.
Now, having said all of that, there are some other good things in here. This is a bipartisan bill. Just like Leader Schumer said, you get some things you like, you give the other side things they like. That's what bipartisan compromise is all about. And I think on the net, this is a very good solution. And as to the debt and deficit concerns, most of this domestic spending, as you pointed out, is one-time spending. It's hurricane relief. I mean, what are we not going to rebuild Houston? We're not going to rebuild Florida. We're not going to help Puerto Rico or the fires in California. Those are things that we have to do because our fellow citizens in these disaster ravaged areas need assistance. And that is a proper role for the federal government. So a lot of that spending is one time spending. The other domestic spending is something that we all agree on. We have an opioids crisis in America. Let's get on with fixing it. We think we can get pretty darn close on cancer research and getting some cures. So let's keep that going. We all know we want to work on infrastructure, so we're getting a good down payment on infrastructure. I think there's some other good reforms in this.
Lots of good reforms, he says. Now, he used to be a real fiscal conservative. Now he's talking about all these things that are, well, there's lots of really good things in this. It's bipartisan. We got what we wanted. Schumer and his guys got what they wanted. On the net, this is a very good solution, increasing spending by 21%. On the net, this is a really good solution to have a $1.1 trillion deficit running this year. This is the same Paul Ryan who said this 6 years ago, clip five.
Our debt is literally getting out of our control. Our gross debt has exceeded the size of our entire economy, and we're not doing anything about it. The president hasn't proposed a solution. The Senate hasn't passed a budget since 2009. They're not going to do one this year. We have a debt crisis right in front of us, and what brings down great empires, past and future, is debt, and they're doing nothing to prevent it.
What brings down great empires, past, present, future, is debt. He said it. He said it 6 years ago. Now, you add to that what you just heard there, what your Bible says. I went through some of this on Monday. The apocalyptic crash is coming. National debt is destroying the United States. Look at what the Bible says about, again, just to bring the children into it, providing for your own, it says in the New Testament. Are we providing for our oncoming generation? There's a proverb that says a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, his grandchildren. Forget about our children. What about my children's children? Will they have an inheritance? Will there be anything left in the Social Security fund for them? God says to us, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider the ways of the ant, which provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest, tucking away some for the future. Do you see that in the United States anywhere? Whether you look at it individually or collectively, we are squandering away all of the wealth that God gave to us. And at its core, the cause here is lust and greed, pure and simple. Selfishness. In Luke 12, verse 15, it says, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. Beware of covetousness. Look, I'm not even going to go through the list of all of the wasteful spending. You can find that on your own with a simple Google search. And there is something to be said for all of these disasters. I mean, that's a separate program. I mean, Mr. Ryan's there saying, look, what are we going to not pay for Houston's disaster? Or the fires in California? We have no choice. Well, but what about the tens of billions of other dollars that just go toward all of these government programs that are basically just put out there to pay off constituents? So that so many of these politicians can be voted back into office. And he spoke a parable, excuse me, unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all of my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Wow, we have so much wealth. We have so much prosperity. I mean, we can just coast on this. As long as the military gets its funding, who cares how much money we give to all these social programs? Let's just keep building up the military, going into further debt. Verse 19, this is Luke 12, it says, "And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, you fool, this night your soul shall be required of you. Then who shall those things be which you have provided? So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." Are we rich toward God? Do we love God? Do we have an unselfish, outflowing concern for even our own children and their children? This is not a problem unique to America. People all over the world laying up treasure for themselves. And it will catch up with us. It will. A financial Armageddon is coming. With apologies to Rush Limbaugh, it's coming. And yes, we have been hearing it for quite some time. I've told you before about what Tim Thompson said back in the 1990s. It's coming, and we've got to be ready for it. That's why Mr. Armstrong said back in the 1980s, "Be ready, brethren of God. Be ready to reduce your standard of living. Be ready to get your financial affairs in order, because a day of reckoning is coming." You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
A couple of emails here in response to Joel Hilliker's Trumpet Brief about the latest issue of the Trumpet, the print magazine of the Trumpet, March 2018. It says here, "Thanks for the preview of the next Trumpet magazine. I'll be looking for it in my mailbox." And that fits right in with this other one, saying, "Every time you print a Trumpet monthly edition, I think it's the best until I see the next month. Can hardly wait to read March 2018. This one here came in response to the program, I think it was a couple of days ago, about just the disrespect for the military. And here is an ex-military man saying, "When I served in the military, I was so stupid. I had to read, write, know mathematics, understand graphs and charts, flight theory, aircraft systems, aircraft components, tensile strength and shear strength of various metals, how to weld. I needed to know electricity and electronics, hydraulics, pneumatics, and have an aptitude for mechanics. Had to know the effect of one system on another in flight. Had to speak the language of the aircraft trade, etc., etc., etc. I had to understand weapon systems and a plethora of other things military related. I feel so stupid." That's someone who obviously learned a lot in his military training. Another one here says, "I can't overexpress the value of your daily news source. It enables us to watch this world as Christ has commanded, and we can simply get the facts here, like eating an organic apple right off the tree, cause and effect, or prophecy, fulfilling of prophecy." It says the watching can be frustrating when we learn just how senseless and hopeless this world is. I've struggled at times just hearing the news And I see now why you sometimes have to use sarcasm, because there's so much nonsense. We can't celebrate, let alone respect, our own war veterans. He says that is 2 Timothy 4, verses 3 through 4, in action. We truly would perish without vision. Another one here in response to yesterday's show says, fantastic work by you and your team discussing all of this unsurprising and very damning evidence about this FISA scandal. Your program helps, among many other things, to keep me grounded in what matters most. If I could make a request, I would like to hear you discuss the blessings of diligence on air. So we'll have to make note of that and perhaps get into a Bible study on the subject of diligence in the not-too-distant future. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we're putting the finishing touches on another week of broadcasting here on kpcg.fm. You can send us an email to td@kpcg.fm, and hopefully we can read it next week. We'll be right back. We won't be right back. We're leaving. Bye.